The Six Pillars of Freedom on Freedom 970 KUFO AM Portland.
Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Good morning, Portland, Oregon. This is a live show where we talk about investing, taxes, and the law. I have in the studio with me today co-host Carl Jepson with the Warren Island Law Firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
Morning, Carl. And Kevin Stege with the Baker Colson CPA Firm.
Hello, gentlemen.
And, you know, we're excited today because we got Rodney Johnson with the Harry Dennett Organization, and we're going to bring Rodney right on in. Rodney, are you there?
I am, Chuck.
Well, listen, I thank you for sharing some time with us on the radio, and I do want people to know that if they call in today and ask a question, they're going to get a free copy of Harry Dent's book, and soon I'm going to be offering your book because I see that you are a new author as well.
Yeah. And you can give away books left and right. It'll be perfect.
Well, I knew you'd love that. Yeah. Well, I thought the title of your new book is really exciting because it kind of goes right along with the theme that you guys are doing now about irrational economics.
Well, and it does. And it's kind of a play on words because irrational economics may make people believe that, you know, we're looking at things being wrong. And that's not really true. It's the way that economic theory presents itself that's wrong, because the premise is that they can make consumers behave a certain way. And it just doesn't work. You and I don't usually change what we do, given what the government does, unless, of course, we're trying to minimize taxes. But we prepare for our own future, and so we don't go out and spend when they want us to. And that's the irrational part.
Well, that's exactly right, because we all do things that pertains to us personally.
Yep.
Not to the other person, and the word average is a pretty hard thing for anybody to fit into, because who's average?
Exactly, and I don't like averages because they're mathematically imprecise. I like medians better, but people always talk about average student loans, average credit card, the average consumer, average income. It's like, really? I'm not worried about average. I'm worried about me. I want to know about my income. And I think most people feel the same way. You know, average inflation is 2.1%, but I feel like I'm paying 20% more for, you know, ribs to grill in the backyard and gasoline to fill up my car. That's pretty painful.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Rodney, we've been talking for a long time now about Survive and Prosper, the free newsletter that you and Harry Dent produce, and as co-editors. And we've been promoting that on our show and on our website. And we still do, but it looks like to me, are you guys going to be adding a new additional newsletter?
Well, we changed the name from Survive and Prosper to Economy and Markets. And the reason we did that is because Survive and Prosper, I know what I mean. You know what I mean. I want people to survive financially, not get their wealth stripped away when the market rolls over. And I want them to really do well. The problem is, if you don't know us that well and you see Survive and Prosper, you might think we're selling shotgun shells or, you know, water purifier systems or something. So we decided Economy and Markets much better describes who we are and what we're doing.
I thought we were selling AK-47s.
What's wrong with shotgun shells?
Yeah, you know, this is Oregon, you know. I mean,
it is Oregon. And you know, I live in Florida where, you know, everybody has a gun. So what the heck?
I didn't realize that in Florida. Florida's pretty wide open, huh?
Pretty wide open. There's a big billboard when you drive south from Georgia on Interstate 75, you cross over into Florida, and it's a big billboard that says, Florida is a right-to-carry state. And they're just warning people, you know, you never know what the other guy's got in his pocket, so be careful.
A polite society, or an armed society is a polite society.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, one of the things that does concern me as a as a taxpayer, and this is kind of getting a little off the economic, but it kind of goes along with what you're saying about people be concerned about taxes and everything else. But one of the real concerns I have in this country is that we've kind of the government has taken more and more control of maybe some of our freedoms. And when you have the IRS that goes unchecked and can actually all of a sudden come up with 6-7 executives that they've lost all the emails, they've lost the hard drives, I mean, who really believes that?
I don't know anybody who believes it. It's, you know, the story goes along with, it was reported this morning, and I think the New York Times, that every executive at the Veterans Administration Hospital received a successful rating over the last 4 years. And you look at it and think, seriously? This is accountability? This is what we're paying for? I think I want my money back. How do I do that?
Yeah, as a veteran, I got to tell you, it alarms me the way we're treating veterans in this country. And the VA administration is bad enough, but the VA doesn't affect every single individual. It affects those guys who were veterans and served the country. But the IRS affects every single one of us. And when they go unchecked and they can go after people indiscriminately and then be able to just all of a sudden lose their hard drives, I mean, I got to tell you, the next time I get audited, I better be careful, my CPA's in the room. I'm going to lose my hard drive. So,
well, you see, it doesn't work for you, Chuck. Just so you know ahead of time, like when Tim Geithner claimed he wasn't aware of the rules on how the tax rules applied to domestic help, and he was allowed to claim the TurboTax defense. I did it on TurboTax, and it didn't work, and he didn't get a penalty. The rest of us don't get that. There's a magic barrier once you cross over into Washington, D.C., to where you all of a sudden get perks the rest of us don't seem to be able to get.
Yeah, I really think we need to change that, though. I really do. Well, for this country to survive, we're going to need. I mean, when I read Harry's books and I read some of the things you guys have put out, I think it's going to take a total effort of the entire country to pull together to get through some of the hard times we're going to be coming to.
Now, the question is, though, I mean, and clear this off economic topic, but when you find a way to change that, let me know, because simply voting hasn't worked for me yet. I keep trying.
Yeah, I know. The problem is we've got about 40% of the country that doesn't read, doesn't investigate, doesn't look, and they just go in and they vote the Pravda party line, and that's it. They might as well be wearing a gray little uniform saying, send me my check every month because I am doing everything you want me to do, and I'm not going to go against that because I'm just going to keep voting that way no matter what because I get a paycheck.
There again, I don't know how you solve it.
I don't either. Well, listen, tell us about your book because I looked at this. I didn't realize you had written this book. And is it available on Amazon?
It's not available on Amazon yet. It will be probably in a couple of months or in about a month. What we're doing instead is we're selling it internally first and, of course, distributing it through our partners like you. And it is basically a compilation of the articles and essays that I've written over the last couple of years on different topics, different economic topics. And so it's short reads. You know, it's not a sit-down, slog-through economic book. It's really, you know, 2 to 3 pages at a pop on student loans, on interest rates, on, you know, just a myriad of things that we all deal with in our daily lives.
Well, you know, I keep telling my clients they need to buy Harry's new book and they need to buy The Spending Wave. And The Spending Wave, I think, is one of the best fundamental tools for people to look at and use as a reference source. And if you will, it's a playbook for the future.
Exactly. It gives you a long-term look at where things are going. And there's noise along the way. There's ups and downs. You know, nobody knows when the ISIS group is going to invade Iraq and slow down oil production. And nobody knows when the Europeans are going to change some central bank policy. But what we do know is that over the long term, people spend in very predictable ways. And you can graph it. And it gives you a sense of what's coming. This whole, you know, lack of growth here and in Western Europe, and everybody struggling with it and trying to push on this rope through central bank policy and different tactics, we were talking about it 20 years ago, saying this is what's going to happen. We're going to be in a low growth, low interest rate environment, and it's going to last between 7 and 12 years. And here we are. It's not It's not magic. And we're just looking at people and what they do as they get older.
You know, I am going to say here, we do have a toll-free number. If you want to call in and ask a question, it's open to the studio audience to call in and ask Rodney a question as well as the three of us. You can call 1-800-990-0750. That's 800-990-0750. And locally, 503-417-7626.
Rodney, you know, you just mentioned one of the things that I wondered about because I don't know the numbers, and maybe you do, and that is you mentioned, you know, what if the ISIS people get in and sort of take over the oil production in Iraq? How big a problem is that for us, and how would that manifest itself? Or could it manifest itself, I guess?
Yeah, you know, very interestingly, Carl, it's not a problem, and it's a good thing and a bad thing at the same time. Our refineries in the United States are mostly tooled to refine the type of oil that comes from the Middle East and comes from the North Sea. It's heavy crude. They're not built to refine what we get from our own country, which is light sweet. And the reason is our production was declining for so many years, really from the early 70s, that people presumed it was going to tap out. And until fracking came along, they were right. And so we're kind of in a weird place where we use the exact oil that we get from those places. You would think that as this group takes over this big refinery just north of Baghdad that, you know, stops production and it squeezes oil supplies and creates a rift and havoc across the world, but that's not what they want. What they want to do is pump the oil themselves and keep the money. And because oil is fungible, meaning one barrel of heavy sulfur crude is the same as another barrel of heavy sulfur crude, it doesn't matter if we don't buy from ISIS, which of course we won't. We don't buy from the Iranians either, but the North Koreans will, the Chinese will. There's all sorts of people that'll buy from them. And if the same amount of oil is going onto the world market, how it's split up among buyers and sellers really doesn't matter.
Well, I guess that's encouraging. I can keep my truck then.
You can keep your truck because in another direction, we're actually coming back on, and now we're producing more oil in the U.S. than we import from other areas. We're still struggling with what to do with it, but we are producing more domestically, and it's only going to grow for a number of years in the future, between, you know, 20 and 30, depending on who you ask. And so we're going to rotate back to where we can refine our own oil. It's going to happen. Changing refineries, you don't. You build a new one. Building a new one is an environmental, you know, craziness getting it through the government. But there will be a backlash to where we can actually produce and use our own fuel or own oil at a greater rate. And so things will change to where we're more self-sufficient. And it'll be things like ISIS taking over this refinery where we say, look, we just don't want to deal with them anymore.
Well, you know, Rodney, well, first off, you know, Chuck, I do have a slight issue with something you said earlier. You said next time you get audited. I'm trying to remember the first time.
Oh, I haven't got audited yet.
Okay, yeah, we'll let that be.
Yeah. But I got to be careful with my CPAs here. So.
That's right.
And that's the wrong answer, Chuck. You're supposed to say, I've been audited 712 times, and it's always come out clean. That way nobody comes to go look at you again. When you say I've never been audited, it raises that flag of, hey, maybe this time.
I can assure you if I do get audited, I will come out clean. How's that?
You're in good shape. But, you know, Rodney, I occasionally get a chance to pop open your guys' newsletters, and I do enjoy what I read. Well, the last one I read on a kind of a more lighthearted note was your comparisons between the airlines, and I thought that was had some fairly good insight, you know, into older companies that are slogged in their old ways compared to some of the, you know, relatively newer companies that are maybe a little more up with the times, customer service, so on and so forth. Maybe you could recount that a little bit just for our listeners who don't subscribe to your newsletter. But, you know, I think it has some good information regarding, you know, where companies are headed.
Yeah, it has. I'm glad you brought that up. The article was about, you know, good companies versus bad companies in terms of customer service and growth. Mm-hmm. And it was comparing old line carriers, the Delta Airlines and Uniteds and Americans of the world, with Southwest. Southwest isn't new since it, you know, was developed in the 70s, but it is certainly newer than all those other airlines. Southwest has another distinguishing factor. It's never been through bankruptcy. And that, by the way, puts it in a very small minority of airlines. You know, Delta Airlines went through bankruptcy after 9/11. United Airlines went through bankruptcy in 2004. American Airlines is coming out of bankruptcy. Continental Airlines went through bankruptcy. All these people have done it. They operate underneath bankruptcy laws, which allows them to do things like break contracts and not do certain things like fulfill some obligations, whereas Southwest just keeps chugging along. And in my world, it's because they're focused on what all of us want. They're rotating to what I think of as the next stage in our economy, which is client service and understanding our very keen sense of cost. You know, the old line airlines are based on rewards. They're based on, well, if you get miles, then you get X. And I was standing in line to get on some airlines. I think it was US Air going to D.C. one day. And by the time they got to somebody who didn't have miles, didn't have priority, hadn't used their credit card, hadn't purchased priority access, and didn't have a gold star on their left thumb, there was only 12 people left waiting to get on the stupid airline. And so it's like, well, if everybody's got priority, that means nobody's got priority.
That's right.
And it just struck me that before they boarded anyone, they came across and said, look, if you're carrying a big carry-on bag, and you're not in zone 1, 2, or 3, you might as well just bring it up here now because you won't have any room. And I thought, that's service. That's great service. And whereas with Southwest, of course, you know exactly what you get. In our world, that is where we're headed in terms of jobs and in terms of the next corporate model, where the person at the front line dealing with the individual client or purchaser has some responsibility and some power to make your experience pleasant versus that's the way we do it. You know, the old corporate line of that's the way we do it, where there's no one responsible dealing with the client. It's some big corporate mass somewhere that makes decisions.
You know, I think you're right on that. And consumers anymore are I think, taking much more responsibility for their spendings. You know, it just rubs me the wrong way to, you know, pay more up front for one trip so that I get miles that I may or may not use in the future under heavy restrictions. That just doesn't rub me. Same thing as extended warranties on a new vehicle, prepaying for a major repair with interest two major repairs beforehand. You know, that's just not, you know, I think consumers are starting to catch on to stuff like that.
I love extended warranties. When people offer them to me, you know, because, of course, you know, the only reason you get offered an extended warranty at the counter when you buy anything electronic is because they make money. If they didn't make money, they wouldn't offer you the warranty.
That's right.
But I love the idea. It's like, well, your product is so shoddily built, it's so bad that it's going to break and I need a warranty. Is that what you're telling me? I mean, I shouldn't buy this thing because it's a piece of junk? I mean, won't it actually survive and, you know, have a useful life of a number of years? And, of course, you know, I'm talking to some poor cash register operator who has the little script they're supposed to go through. So, again, you get this, you know, amorphous, faceless group that, well, they. So I'm with you. I don't buy
that's things. When they give you another 10% discount, and then you know you're screwed.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, Rodney, I got to tell you, I've had an experience with I had a pleasant experience also with Southwest, and I've had an unpleasant one, but I'm going to talk about the pleasant one because when I recently flew to Minneapolis to a meeting and then flew back, I got to fly on their new airline. Have you been on their new airline?
The new plane?
Yeah.
I have not been on their new plane. I'm still the 737-200s is what they've flown for a long time, and those are still the ones that we get on our Florida routes.
Okay, well, you're going to be happy because you're a rather tall individual.
Yep.
The new plane, I'm telling you, it's really nice because the seats are much wider apart. So if you got long legs, it's a much more comfortable flight. And it seemed like to me, it was almost like, the seats for the emergency area where it's wider and there's a lot more room. Mm-hmm. It almost seemed like all the seats had a lot more room. And I really enjoyed it. I flew it twice on my leg down and coming back. And I was really happy that I got the new plane because it was so much more comfortable than the older plane.
Maybe I can ask them on my next flight to switch out for the new plane because I'm tall.
Yeah. Well,
we'll see how that
goes. For a tall guy, it's kind of nice to have that more leg room there. Your legs don't, you know, go against the seat. When the guy in front of you moves it back, it crunches you up to your spine. So kind of nice to be comfortable. But I definitely agree with you. I like to fly Southwest. The flights are reasonable. They're one of the few airlines that do have reasonable prices. And if you want to book online, you can get a much better deal than you can going through their phone system.
You can, and Southwest, it's the transparency I like. If you're going to charge me to fly, charge me to fly. I'm okay with that. But don't charge me to fly and then say, but if you want a seat other than the middle of row 28, then you have to pay to get on the aisle or to get further to the front. It's like, wait a second, I'm still on the plane. I mean, pretty soon they're going to have coin-operated bathrooms. And by the way, they did that in some planes in Europe where you had to pay to use the toilet. And that could happen on some of these discount airlines like Spirit.
That would not be a good deal.
You know, it seems like the price of cleaning up would be more expensive than the profit made in, you know. I don't know. It just seems kind of like an off, not necessarily an economically feasible sort of fee.
You know, I'm part of a website called Airfare Watchdog, and you enter your destinations that you think you might want to go to, you know, from Portland here. And they give you an email every week or 2 weeks that indicates, hey, what's the lowest rate that they found over all the carriers? And Spirit always comes up. But what they're not telling you is all of the hidden fees. And when you talk, I mean, if you want to do anything, you know, any bag, if you take anything more than the clothes off your back, they're going to charge you more. And pretty soon it's more than Southwest or one of the other carriers. And it's an interesting analysis.
You know, Rodney, I have to ask you about this because it's something I talk about every day, being a financial planner and meeting with people when I go over their portfolios and stuff. And it does drive me a little nuts because you say here, why do people repeatedly make irrational decisions? I mean, you can almost bet that people are buying into a rising market right now and they're dumping a bunch of money in when they're buying high. And then when the market drops, they're going to sell. So they're doing the opposite of what they ought to be doing. And yet you try to tell them, but they still do it. It's human nature. They keep doing it anyway.
Yeah, I have a lot of sympathy for people in general, but when they deal with the financial markets, particularly right now, because there's a clear sense of understanding of what's going on with our entitlement programs. And it all goes back to that. Is do you have financial security for the rest of your life? And the answer is no. I there are very, very few people I know who say yes to that because most of us don't. And so what that means is we have to do something to better our position for the length of our days and, you know, for our family. And so we try. And we know that there might be some Social Security, there might be some Medicare out there. It may be to a lesser degree. It may not provide the benefits that's going to, you know, keep our standard of living. And so we're told, clearly, you have to put more in to build that up. And then you go looking for choices. And the choices that are going to grow with, you know, any sort of compounding are very, very small. And, of course, it comes back to the Federal Reserve holding interest rates exceptionally low for the last 6 years, which is devastating to anybody who wants to build a balanced portfolio. And it almost forces you into equities where the returns have continued to go up. And so I don't know people who are real happy about it. I don't know anybody who is just smiling and gleeful with abandon jumping in the market because it's the best thing they've ever seen. But they look around and go, what choice do I have? What in the world can I do? And that's where people like you, Chuck, have to do the best you can to educate them as to the other options that are out there, which is very difficult because what they hear all day long from the mainstream media is equities, 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 new high, new high, new high, things are okay, things are okay, things are okay. And they know there's a problem. They're very, very concerned about it. They know there are structural issues. They just don't know what else to do.
Yeah, I think most people realize the mantra they're hearing constantly on TV and in the newspapers just isn't reality.
And I mean, if things are so good, why would you still be putting $35 billion a month to prop up industries? How does that give me confidence things are okay?
Well, in our area, we were very lucky. We did not get hit on the residential side on real estate as bad as a lot of other parts of the country, but the one area we did get hit on, and I'm really concerned about it. I talked to Harry about this last month, and I think I've talked to you about it before too. But one of the concerns I have is I see all this construction building in the commercial side being taken place, and we still probably have a 40 to 45% unoccupied commercial buildings. I mean, you drive down the road, and all you see in commercial buildings are space for lease. That's not a positive sign.
It really isn't. And we've got our eye on commercial real estate because commercial real estate tends to be more local in terms of the banks that lend to build those things. And so local banks didn't have the ability of the big, you know, money center banks to basically just foreclose, write down, and move on some because they got a lot of help from the federal government. And so what they did is they just kept extending the terms of loans. And those have not cleaned up yet. There are a lot of local and regional banks that have these commercial loans outstanding that have just kept extending the terms on them and have not marked them to the real value that they are, which is this is a loan against an empty building, so how in the world can it pay off?
Well, I can tell you, I don't know how some of the people who own these properties are staying afloat because when they're sitting there with a building, and unless they bought it awful cheap and their mortgage payment's awful low, when you're only getting half the rents paying, that's not a good scenario.
Right, and my understanding is that they basically have the banks working with them to say, we're not going to require the full payments on your loan because we recognize you're not getting in rents. And so for that, the bank should be writing down the loan, should be doing all sorts of things, but they're not recognizing the losses. And so it's this, it's called extend and pretend. Extend the terms and pretend everything is okay. And I don't know when that all comes to pass. And so that's one reason we've been very cautious of regional and local banks. They're not bad. We just want to make sure that they're recognizing their portfolio for what it is.
You know, Rodney, one of the things our firm does is we represent a number of landlords, including some commercial landlord-type folks. And one of the things that we see is amongst our clients is that it's, you know, especially things like shopping centers and small office complexes and things like that, it is extremely difficult to get tenants. I mean, new businesses and people wanting to spend the money to move from one place to another are few and far between. And so there's sort of a jealousy in keeping your tenants and trying to do it, but still doing it in an economical way. It's a challenging thing. So that's kind of really where the boots hit the ground there as far as the small business is concerned. And the formerly well-off landlord is struggling right now for commercial property. Now the residential landlords are doing much better here, but because they're not selling houses, I guess. But anyway, but I just a thought. But anyway, I don't know how it takes a long time to get people to have the confidence to start investing and opening a new business and getting a space to do it. So.
Well, and it's interesting you bring that up, and it goes back to our conversation on the airlines. You know, I'm sitting at my desk at home right now, and I have my laptop, which I have a glorified docking station plugged into a large monitor with a wireless keyboard, talking on the phone to somebody several thousand miles away, and, you know, talking about things economic. And so I'm able to do my work effectively sitting at this workspace at my house, and that's becoming more common. Telecommuting was a big deal 12, 14 years ago as an idea, but it really didn't come to pass until people made it happen for economic reasons. They looked at the downturn and said, instead of getting new space and bringing 12, 15, 20 of us together, we'll have a small meeting space and just kind of work out of your homes and divide and conquer. And I think you're seeing a lot of people not cut corners because it's not a bad thing, but minimize their expenses because, like you say, nobody's looking at this and saying, I have such confidence over the next 20 years, I'm willing to put that money out there and take on that expense that's going to stay with me no matter what.
Well, you know, with modern technology, I know a lot of companies we work with, and of course, we have monthly calls with you guys and presentations that are video. And video is going exponentially in growth over any other medium right now. Streaming videos and YouTube presentations are just going absolutely bananas. And I'm wondering what the long-range effect is going to be for the hotel industry because I know a lot of companies that I work with, we have webinars almost monthly where instead of all of us flying into a town to get together, we actually have a live presentation, and we can each individually ask a question. And with Skype now, you can be seen when you're talking. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And I wonder what that what that's going to do with the way this is exponentially growing, I think it's going to hurt our travel industry.
Well, I think it rotates it. We as a nation idled a lot of capacity in terms of planes after 2007, 2008, and really back 2001. And so planes are awfully full because we don't fly as many of them. And so I believe what we're seeing is this rotation from business travel to this combination business and leisure travel, where I'll go to a conference, but I might take my wife with me. I don't go to work meetings as much anymore, but I do fly for pleasure travel a little bit more often. And so I think it really goes back to what we want from these industries as consumers. And as we move away from that business model, we move away from the more elite separation socioeconomic group that the old mileage programs did into the, I really have an eye on my expenses, but I want to make sure my experience is still good, like Southwest.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Rodney, we really enjoy you spending your Saturday morning with us and being live on our show. And I'm going to be ordering some of your books and offering them off our radio show.
Well, thank you very much. And it's always my pleasure to be here, Chuck.
Great. Thank you very much, Rodney. We appreciate your time. We're going to take a quick break and come back with Investing Simplified. If you want to call and ask a question, you can call us at 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750. You're listening to Investing Simplified, the seventh pillar of freedom.
Let's face it, the rules of retirement have changed. What we were told to do just a few years ago now seems like a pipe dream. Hi, this is Michael Burnett for Chuck Price, owner of Price Financial Group Wealth Management. You know the drill. Be a loyal employee. You'll get a pension. Your home will be worth 10 to 20 times what you paid for it when you retire. So how's that working for you? Call Chuck Price right now. He's located right here in Portland. Featured expert on Investing Simplified on AM 970. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or close to retiring, and he focuses on protection of principal and tax strategies to minimize your taxes. Call right now and get Chuck's retirement report. It's packed full of information on generating more income during retirement, how to leave more to your heirs, and so much more. 503-253-3000. Chuck Price, Price Financial Group Wealth Management, on the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Investing Simplified. Welcome back to Investing Simplified. It is time for Carl's comments, which is just a time when I speak of something that comes up in my practice or try to offer some practical advice. And today is a little bit more of a practicality, since we were talking about things like airline fees and, you know, things that are practical in our life, you know, working from home and a variety of things like that. So today I'm going to talk about the top 10 ways to simplify your estate planning. And number 10. Start early. One of the hardest things to do is to get folks to do something on their estate planning. And so that's the one thing that I would recommend we do. And then the second thing is it's a very important to, in this is number 9, inventory your assets, your advisors, your papers. In other words, where is all your stuff? Where are all your people? Where are all the papers that reflect that? And make sure that you have that in a place where whoever's going to take over or manage your affairs when you're not around knows where it is and can find it, because it's really hard if they don't know where that stuff is and what it is. Number 8, consolidate multiple bank accounts. One of the things that some people do, they have, you know, 5, 6, 7 different bank accounts sitting around. That makes it really awkward for the person who has to take over for you to kind of go out and figure out what you're doing with that. Now, if you have those for kind of separate businesses or something like that, that's fine. But if it's just because you kind of like to, you know, well, unless you're fortunate enough to have more money than you can put in for, you know, over the insurable, the FDIC limit, that's fine. I guess, you know, you have as many banks as you want. But if that's not the reason, I mean, if you're not having it because of the size of the bank account, then try to consolidate some of those things so that you don't have, you know, quite as many places to go. Also, when it comes to those account numbers, that means that you've got different PIN numbers and passwords and other electronic stuff, and you should have that as part of your inventory somewhere that your trusted person can find it, because they may need to get into some of that stuff and find out some information, and they won't be able to do it if they don't have your passwords and your PINs and your security codes and all those other things. Now, granted, there's a risk in doing that by writing them down and all that other stuff, so you'll have to figure that out for yourself as to how you might do that. Probably the most secure way would be to write a list and then put it in the safe deposit box that your trusted person is the only other person who has access to that box. So that might be one way to do it. And there are others, you know, some people have big safes at home or little safes or whatever. That might be good too. But nonetheless, those are more and more becoming more important. The electronic property is very difficult to get to if you don't know where it is. So number seven, same thing, only consolidate your multiple stock accounts. Or if you happen to have a million stock certificates sitting around in your, you know, dresser drawer, please, please, please find someone like Chuck. Have them put them in there. I know those papers are pretty and they look really neat and it's fun to have them. But please, please, please put them with the broker somewhere. And even if you make all the decisions, just at least put it in their account so that if someone has to do something with them, you know, they'll be able to do that, because transferring individual stocks through a probate process can be just extraordinarily difficult. Or if you're transferring them in as part of setting up a living trust, if they're in individual stocks, it's a very difficult process, because most stocks have different kinds of what they call transfer agents, and they all have different requirements, and they're trained to screen out, not screen in. So
and it can be very costly.
Yeah,
too.
That's right. It can be very costly.
I would say that's probably one of the areas that I've seen the most headache in from my estate clients is actual stock certificates and getting that where it's supposed to go.
Absolutely.
Oh, I totally agree. And if you lose them, it costs you a bundle to get them replaced.
Yeah, most transfer agents charge 3% of the value.
Oh, wow.
So if you've got a $30,000 stock certificate that you lose or damage or it can't be processed, you're looking at $900 just to get the certificate.
Oof. Okay, number six, shred your papers that are 10 years old. Just get rid of that stuff. You know, having your loved ones have to go through all that stuff. You know, the repair bill from your 1999 Dodge pickup truck like mine. You know,
be the same as get rid of your hard drive if it's 10
years
old?
Yeah, that's the same. Yeah. And it's just you know, too much trouble. So number five, see your estate planning attorney. Number four, review your estate plan that you dutifully had done with your estate planning attorney.
I can't believe that wasn't one and two.
At least it's not number one. I mean, I put the CPA second, so then you have a review that with your CPA. Whoa. And the reason for that is because the CPA has a little different perspective than the attorney. And if in all honesty, most lawyers would have to admit this, that the CPA is better with numbers. So, you know, what can you say?
Finally getting some respect.
You're getting some
here.
Respect here. I got to say it. Yep. Number three, give your kids stuff you don't use often, like, you know, RVs, camping equipment, boats.
The beach house.
You know, the stuff that you got at your house, you know, and then just reserve the right to use it periodically. So in other words, you know, you can go over to Johnny's house and pick up the trailer and go camping, but then you take it back and you dump it on him. Let them deal with this stuff. They're going to get it anyway. Might as well give it to them now. And just so long as you get to use it occasionally. And the chances are, you know, when you buy that RV and stuff, you don't use it as much as you thought you were going to anyway. So it's better off with the younger people. So number two, give your kids their stuff that's still at your house. Make them take it. You know, keep it out of your garage. And finally, number one, you've heard this before from me.
Drum roll.
Yes.
Yeah. Hmm? Drum roll, please.
Yes. Number one, clean your garage. Follow the three D's. Here are the three D's of garage cleaning. Donate it. Number two, distribute it. Number three,
dump it.
Dump it.
Yeah.
And so that way, all of that stuff will be out of the way, and it'll be one less thing that your kids or your family will have to do when you're no longer able to do it. Now, I wish I could tell you that I had done that successfully myself entirely, but we're working on it. And so time goes on, and maybe someday we'll actually have a garage space. So
it's a work in progress.
You know, valuing an estate for estate tax purposes, we come always to, you've got the real estate, you've got the stock accounts, you've got the vehicles, some life insurance. One of the things that we ultimately come down to is the personal property, and it's always worth less than what you think it's worth, and that most of the value in personal property is it is the sentimental value, or it keeps you warm, or there's a utilitarian purpose for it. So,
well, you know, Kevin, that's one of the hardest things that Carl, I know you and I talk to our clients all the time about, that they need to sit down in the morning, maybe with a cup of coffee right after listening to Investing Simplified, and they need to sit down together and talk and discuss who they want to get various things. And it's a hard thing to do, but you really got to do that, because there's personal property that does have sentimental value. Maybe it's great-great-grandma's necklace or diamond ring or something that you want to keep in your family. Now, you may want to keep it in your family. You don't know that the kids want to keep it in the family, but at least you should direct that to the kids that you want to get that. Or the family member you want to get various other items. And that's a very hard thing to do. And I think that's one of the things very few people do successfully.
Right. Well, one of the things, too, I'm going to suggest this as number 3.5, and that would be to take those items, you know, like grandma's ring or things. Where do they usually sit? They usually sit in your safe or in your, you know, safe deposit box or somewhere. And do you usually wear them or use them? No, they're there because they're kind of historical and all that kind of stuff. You know, here's another thought. Maybe give those away now. Because here's the one thing that is of concern, and that is, quite frankly, some people give stuff away twice or three times, or promise it, rather. They say, family number one is visiting grandma, and grandma says, oh, I'm going to be giving you kids the big clock and the painting thing and all of that stuff. And then the next Sunday, family number two shows up and says, oh, I'm going to give you that big clock and the painting thing. And pretty soon, you know, you've just set your kids up for a disputed estate. And even if they resolve it and they grumble about it, they're still mad, because they're still, one of them gets the stuff and they're still mad about it. So try to avoid that situation.
One gets the gold mine, one gets the shaft.
Yeah. Mom loved you better. So anyway, if you simplify these things and clarify these things with your kids, it's much easier than if you, leave it unresolved entirely. And if you know your kids are going to be, especially that, and you know, if your kids are going to be fighting about stuff, you probably know. You know, you're not likely to admit it, but you probably know. All the more reason to identify who gets what and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, it's interesting to see the generational differences in attitude towards stuff. Some of the older generation that has gone through the Great Depression, so on and so forth, you know, you'll see stacks of washed and cleaned cottage cheese cartons, you know, boxes of them saved because there may be a purpose for them, or, you know, 5 inches of string left from the end of the roll. Whereas the current generation is easy come, easy go a little bit. So it's
That's for sure. And, you know, even when it comes to things like china and silverware and things like that, ironically, you'll find that the younger generation may not have the same kind of, you know, it's not as important to them. It's just not as interesting. I don't know whether it's important, but generally it's just they're not as interested in it. And certain collectible kinds of things, they're kind of, well, it's kind of neat, but I don't really want to do anything with it.
Well, you can go to Walmart and get a replacement just like that.
Okay.
I'm sure
all the collectors in the world would be just dying. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, listen, with that, we're going to take a quick break and come back with the Knowledge Trust. And we'll be right back on Investing Simplified. We're going into our last segment, so if you want to call, you need to call in the next 5 minutes. 503-417-7626. Our toll-free 800-990-0750. We do have a couple of lines open up, so give us a call, and we'll try to answer your questions in the limited time we got left, but give us a call.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over 3 decades, and its 9 attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
Actually, we're going to go into the Knowledge Trust at this time, and Kevin's here, but we're going to bypass on that because of the limited time we have left. And we're going to talk about just some stuff among the three of us. But before we do that, Kevin, how would somebody get a hold of you if they want to get a hold of you?
Well, thank you much, Chuck. It's at bakercolson.com, and we're located out the east side of Gresham, 2414 Northeast Division. And our phone number is 503-666-5569, and we would welcome any contact from our listening audience.
And Carl?
WarrenAllen.com and 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue, conveniently located off of I-205, just north of Gleason. And 503-255-8795. And likewise, we do welcome your inquiries or calls or just interest.
And your website?
Website is WarrenAllen.com.
BakerColson.com.
Well, and you can reach us at Price Finance Group Wealth Management. We're conveniently located right on the 205 at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103. And our website is pfgwm.com. And I do want to encourage you to go to my website. And if you're at all close to Social Security, I have an excellent portal on my site that you can fill in some information and get a quote on how to actually maximize your Social Security benefit. So there's some good information there, strictly educational. I certainly recommend for you to do it. If you're concerned about other investments and things, there's various videos there that you can go on and learn about different kinds of investments. I do want to talk about, you know, managed money at this time, and we were talking about balanced portfolios. One of the biggest concerns I have is what the first 13 years of this new decade, or new century actually, has shown that just a diversified portfolio by itself is not going to get you through. And particularly if you try to beat the market and you try to move from one sector to the other sector, you're not going to come out very well. Your best bet is to have a strategic plan with having some of your money in a managed portfolio that is managed for preservation to not lose money. And no investment can guarantee you that you're not going to lose money, but we do have some managed portfolios, one of which has went 22 years without a loss and one that's went 18 years without a loss. And if you don't have some of your money, serious money, and those kind of things, just go ahead and go back the last 10 years and look at what you really made on your money. Most people are shocked when they go back and really look at what they've actually made on their money. And it's been a very tough marketplace. You have to have a strategy to compete with what's coming. And if you don't have it, you are going to get smacked. I don't think there's any question about it. But we're gonna. Oh shoot! You know, I read that clock totally wrong. We still got about 11 minutes. We got plenty of time. So hey, listen, if you got a question, give us a call at 503-417-7626 or toll free 800-990-0750. You know,
well, I was going to say we got an email from a longtime listener. I think you might have got a copy of it. You might have seen it. It was regarding long-term care insurance proceeds and some specific questions on that. The one question regarding taxability of the proceeds. I know there were some other questions regarding, I don't have the email in front of me, but regarding the proceeds and how they're treated on the tax return is, you'd think off the top of your head, it's always going to be non-taxable, but that's not the case. There is actually a limit, a daily limit, if it's set up a certain way. For the most part, for most people, it's going to be non-taxable. So in other words, your long-term care insurance, you're in a home, long-term care home, you've submitted your claim, they're reimbursing you or paying the facility directly for those costs. The limit is on it, when it's on a per diem basis, a per day basis that you're in the facility that they're reimbursing qualified cost, it's going to be $320 a day. So you can kind of do the math, find the monthly amount. And if you're receiving more benefit than that, then the difference is probably going to be taxable to the insured. So
even if your expenses are exceeding that?
Well, you get to deduct your out-of-pocket expenses, yes. But this is just the reimbursement from the insurance company. Once it exceeds a per day amount, then that excess would be taxable. So it's not exactly
Long-term care policy.
Well, $9,000 a month. Yeah. That's a lot of leeway there.
I've seen some up right around though, with some, you know, really acute care.
I have some clients that are paying that much in their long-term care.
Well, I know that with my mother, we did 24-hour care for her for about a month when she came out of the hospital and then into a nursing home and had to have some rehab and then she went home. And that was way back when. I don't remember when, but it was about $11,000 a year then. And I know that, you know, that since then it's skyrocketed. I'll bet it's 15 to 20 grand for 24-hour care at home if that's what you really wanted to try to do.
Wow.
Which is a little bit beyond most people.
That's pretty expensive, yeah. So the second part of the email, the non-tax side, we'll address that next week and get our listeners the final carrot on that.
So. Yeah, and you can send me a email at askchuck@pfgwm.com, and we'll answer those on the air if you want us to. And you can also just email me, chuck@pfgwm.com, or you can email Kevin at
kstege, that's K-S-T-E-E-G-E, @BakerColson.com.
And Carl?
Jepsen, J-E-P-S-E-N, @warrenallen.com.
Yeah, and that way, if you're too shy to call and ask us on the air, you can do that and email us and get a question,
and definitely put your ideas, your questions down. You've probably got some thoughts. It's probably too late to call today, but we'll have a full show next week. We won't have any special guests that I know of, and so if you think about it during the week and give us a call early, and we'd be very delighted to take your call and see what we can do with it.
Yeah, you know, and here's the thing. In the investment world and in the legal world and in the tax world, there are certain things you have to do and to protect yourself and your future, and particularly from planning an estate, you need to make sure that you're within the guidelines of the estate taxes and to avoid any unnecessary expenses you may have down the road. And from a tax standpoint, we all have to pay taxes. We kind of joke about it and say about paying taxes or being audited, but the reality is you got to pay your taxes. There's no two ways about it. And in investing, the thing is that you do have to set up a design portfolio where part of your portfolio is a conservative portfolio where you're going to protect your preservation of some of your principal, because Nobody knows how long you're going to need your money. That's something none of us know. We don't know how long we're going to be here. We all hope to be here a long, long time, but there's no guarantees.
Well, and I think this last week has showed us the other thing you need to protect is your hard drive. You need to do a backup because apparently there's been a glut of failed hard drives at the IRS, and we would hate that to strike our listening audience.
You know, that's a modern day variant on the dog eating your homework. You know,
Carl, I just wonder in the court of law, if we went in our excuse for breaking the law was that we lost our hard drive, do you think the judge would be receptive to that?
Not at all. Most would be somewhat less inclined to hear your case.
And I wonder, Kevin, how many cases are going to come up here in the next few years where the IRS is going after somebody and they use the same excuse, well, I lost it all on my hard drive.
Yeah. Well, that's the modern twist to what was going on a couple decades ago of shredding documents, I believe.
Yeah.
If there's no evidence, there's...
Yeah, no smoking
gun. It didn't happen.
No. You know,
what amazes me is if the NSA has all these emails and all these conversations, why isn't somebody going after the NSA to have all the information they have on the IRS? I would think they would have all of it somewhere, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would think. I think my big issue with the whole thing is I don't care which administration it would be. I don't care what congressman or anything that it would come from, but using the IRS as a wing for your political purposes, I think that rubs everybody the wrong way, and that just can't be allowed. So,
yeah, I don't care if you're a liberal or a conservative. I don't think anybody wants the government to use the IRS as an instrument against their foes.
But, you know, that's one of the weaknesses with having a strong government. If people don't realize if you give all the power to such a strong government, that's the way things are going to go. And that's just part of the fruit of the tree of a socialistic society. So, you know, I guess we're making our own bed.
I hope you're wrong.
Me too.
I mean, I thought Rodney's comment was that he's been trying to vote to change it, but it doesn't work. And I think the positive side of it is we still have a constitution, and we still have to have this country, we the people. It doesn't say we the government. It says we the people. And hopefully us people will out-survive strong governments.
That's right.
Well, they usually do.
Yep. Well, there's our music, and we're going to go out with a little song called My Name is Money. And if you've not heard this or seen the video, I'd highly recommend you go online and look at the YouTube presentation. It's quite a humorous. If you're a country western person like myself, there's a lot of cameo appearances of other people in there, but it's a good little song. So thank you all very much for listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be back next Saturday. And don't forget to call us and ask your question or email us. Thank you very much. I can make it rain on you, but Lord, I sure do shine. I can bring you love.